Hi, I'm Nina, and this is Color Wheel, a podcast about modern and contemporary paintings by women artists. Hi, this is Nina. In this episode, I'm going to talk about a painting from 1925 called Portrait of My Mother by Florine Stettheimer. I have a lot of ideas about this painting, so this will be part one, followed by a part two. So glad to have you along. I saw this painting at the Museum of Modern Art in New York while I was looking for a topic for a modernism paper for a class. I was on the fifth floor looking at muddy cubist paintings with names like Man with a Guitar, where there was barely a man or a guitar in sight. As I walked toward the elevator, thinking about the donuts in the MoMA Cafe, I saw this painting of a woman shaped like an almond. I thought, what is that? I knew I had found a topic for my paper, an accomplishment that felt critically important to me at that moment. Here's why. Last year, I was working as an AI product manager in the tech industry. I was promoting AI across my firm, identifying viable projects, and pushing projects across the finish line. Still, it wasn't my dream job. I knew I wanted to do something else. Talk about art. But I couldn't figure out how to make the transition between my existing job and the creative job in my fantasy life. Also, I had anxiety at work, wondering why everyone else seemed so clued in to concepts in finance and technology that eluded me. I would spin into a panic every time someone on a Zoom call seemed to know more about earnings season than I did. My therapist assured me that my anxiety was my anxiety and not a result of my job. I tried to buy into that, but I was sure that if not for that job, I would be totally at ease. As part of my transition plan, I got into a master's program at Hunter, where I could take evening classes. Amazing. I took a class about Marcel Duchamp and his famous fountain toilet. I was in a class about art and the sense of smell. And then I got into the greatest class of all time. Medieval mosaics, although I wasn't sure how I would complete my schoolwork because I was so busy at my job, until I got laid off in February. Now I could see what my therapist was talking about. I was flipping out about a whole new set of issues. No work friends, no structure, no income. Sure, a package, but it didn't feel the same. I figured I would double down on medieval mosaics, because school and art could fix anything. 2 weeks later, I was moving furniture around in my apartment and felt something odd in my back. I had herniated, or squished, two of the discs in my spine. I woke up with a burning pain that started in my back and radiated out to my hip and the front of my right leg. Standing up and sitting down were excruciating. I sat around my apartment for months, wondering who I was and why I existed. I couldn't remember having any valuable skills or a single original idea. In June, when I could finally hobble around the block, I signed up for a modernism class. My professor asked what other modern art classes I had taken. I was halfway through the list when she asked, "Then why are you here?" I was thinking, "Madam, I am just trying to protect my mental health." I knew the class would not fix my lack of a job or my anxiety, but I thought it might restore some of my confidence so I could calm the fuck down and enjoy life for 5 minutes. When I first saw Portrait of My Mother, I had so many questions. What was this disc-shaped woman doing on this heavily patterned background? What was that umbrella-shaped object in the top corner that looked like a fake sun? And why were there children dancing on the table in the background of this otherwise serious-looking painting? Let's find out. Florine Stettheimer was a wealthy Jew who was mostly raised in Europe and moved back to the United States with her mother and sisters in 1914 after they were stranded in Switzerland on the eve of World War I. Stettheimer was 43 at the time. She was classically trained as an artist And in addition to her lush, technically perfect figure studies, she has this one stunning drawing of a handkerchief tacked to a wall that is so realistic, it just kills me. By the 1910s, she was painting portraits and still lifes in a more modern style. She painted Family Portrait 1 in 1915, employing non-realistic colors for skin tones, like Matisse, and using large brushstrokes to create roughly shaped apples and pears in the style of Cézanne. At the age of 45, she had her first and only public show at a gallery called M. Knoedler & Company. The night before the show, after double-checking that all the paintings were hung to her satisfaction, she said, "I thought I might feel happier after dinner, but I have had dinner." Oh, Florine, I feel you. One time, my therapist asked me why I needed to be perfect at everything. I said, "I'm not a perfectionist." And she said, "Girl, are you kidding me?" The show was a public success and a critical success. The New York Evening Post called Stettheimer's paintings courageous and straightforward. But no one bought anything. How sad is it that no matter how good we are, no matter how much encouragement we get from friends, we look to that economic barometer as the measure of our success. But like sharks and wildebeests, we must keep moving or die. Stettheimer went on to create her greatest works after that show, and Lord, I hope I can do the same. Portrait of My Mother, painted 9 years after the show at the Knoedler Gallery, is a painting that speaks to the senses, and it plays with our notions of space and reality. It provides access to the things Stettheimer's mother loved via a composite view of places, objects, and events that may have occurred in different places over many years. Therefore, what ends up in the painting is reality plus fantasy. Today, in part one of this podcast, I'll share a few thoughts about what this painting means. More to come in part two. At the center of the composition is Stettheimer's mother, Rosetta, who is 84 and somewhat frail at the time. Her ovoid shape, clad in a dark gown, grounds the painting. Rosetta is the focal point, and her upper body is at the center of the canvas. As our eye roams to investigate the objects that Stettheimer has included in this space, we can always return to Rosetta as a reminder of why we are here and what we should take away from the scene. I think she looks somewhat like an insect. Rosetta has soft white hair and a blank or resigned expression. She wears a large black cloak or overdress that opens in a deep V to reveal a blue-gray gown with a low, round neckline. There is an additional black line on the right side of the opening in her cloak. It could just be an element of the black garment. Or it could indicate a narrow, empty space that gives us a glimpse of Rosetta's body under the cloak. It makes her look svelte with a narrow waist. I don't know what Rosetta's actual shape was at this point in her life, but maybe Florine is hinting at the way she remembers her mother or wants us to remember her. Rosetta also wears a black velvet choker with a white stone at the center, maybe a cameo. The collar, the elbow-length black sleeves, and the V opening of Rosetta's black garment are trimmed in transparent black lace. She has a long scarf made of the same lace draped around her forearms and flowing down the sides of her dress. The curved flounces and delicacy of the shawl make it look like a pair of dragonfly wings flaring out at Rosetta's sides. The lace makes a remarkable visual impression against the deep black of her dress. The bottom of her floor-length gown narrows to a point on the carpet, and one of Rosetta's black silk shoes peeks out at its very center. Every time my eye lands on that shoe, it registers as a glossy insect fang. Rosetta's pale white arms are bent at the elbows in a praying mantis pose. In the fingers of one hand, which rests near her chest, she loosely holds a pair of wire-rimmed glasses. With the other, she holds a small red book. It's a copy of Love Days, her daughter Eddie's novel. It is interesting that Rosetta's arms are positioned within the confines of her black robe, so that her silhouette forms an unbroken oval, making her look a lot like a dark, slim, winged beetle. And to my mind, the densely decorated space around her looks like that beetle's lair. The space Rosetta occupies is a room whose glass doors open out onto a garden. The room itself has outdoor qualities. If you let your eyes lose focus for a minute, you might believe the natural world is taking over the otherwise orderly interior of Rosetta's stately home. Rosetta stands on a variegated rug with hints of gray, pink, yellow, and violet. It's spotted with white flowers with red centers. She could be standing on a large, sun-dappled carpet or a leafy forest floor. The right side of the painting is visually dominated by a large green plant from which spring three healthy fans, whose fronds stretch and flail across a piano and up a wall. They obscure a tulip-shaped lamp and mingle with the curling tendrils in an arrangement of carnations in a vase. Even a miniature round piano bench embroidered with multicolored pansies cleverly mimics nature. Above the green plant is a large decorative element. It looks like an umbrella-shaped canopy. Because of the way the painting is cropped, we only see a quarter of this object. It is the color of balsa wood and has a complex black lace center and dark stripes that connect the middle of the object with its lace-edged border. When I first saw the painting, I saw the canopy out of the corner of my eye and thought, oh, that's the sun. It also looks like a sunflower or an elegant spider attached to the wall. On the upper left of the painting is a big, ruched, puffy curtain. It's dark and light green coloring, and the way it forms a half circle at the top of the painting makes it look like a baby watermelon. Between all these elements, the green fronds, the sunlight canopy, and the ridged watermelon are swaths of transparent embroidered white lace. They cascade down the blue walls in swirls and ruffles, ebbing and flowing as if tied back in sections away from the open doorway at the back of the room. This element is believable as curtains or a wall covering, but its icy white ruffles and flower-like embroidery seem amusingly oversized. It reads like a classy web woven by the black lace spider in the corner and created to entrap the almond-shaped beetle at the center of the scene. This scene is also an exploration of the senses, namely touch, sound, smell, and sight, in service of telling the story of Rosetta. It may not be the story she would have told if she were the author, but it is the story that Florine chooses to tell us with her distinct language of color and form. Tune in to part two to hear more. Thanks for listening.